Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. During the early days of social media, we had MySpace, we had Black Planet, and of course we had the good old AOL chat rooms. But now we have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have TikTok, Snapchat, and a whole lot of questionable and downright dangerous things that often come with them. Remember the milk crate challenge from this summer? How about this new bathroom challenge? Or even the latest, so this is tempting, the smack a teacher challenge. I wish they would. All of them going viral because of social media. After a Facebook whistleblower testified on Capitol Hill this week and a worldwide outage of some of the top social media sites, the power of social media is giving all of us pause. How much control does social media wield for us, for all of us, not just young people, but for all of us? What's a question that we are examining tonight? My experts are Ingrid Sturgis, digital media expert and chair of the Department of Media, Journalism, and Film at the Howard University School of Communications, and social media strategist Brandy Chu. I want to hear from you as well, our listeners, tonight. What do you think about the power of social media on all of us? Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Yes, we're going to use the good old-fashioned telephone tonight. And if you just can't resist, you can tweet me. Yes, tweet me at HFisherWHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Yes, I use those two. Ingrid.
Good evening, Harold. Glad to be here.
Yes, indeed. And Brandy, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me here, Harold.
You're welcome. You are welcome. So, Ingrid, I want to start with you. Have we just completely lost our minds?
No, not really. Actually, It's social media is powerful. We all know that, and we know that worldwide, some people treat Facebook just like it's the internet. And it going down this week just showed us how much power it has, and it really keeps us in tune with what we need to know about social media. It just when it went down, so many people called to tell me, and I was busy. I didn't even realize it. So it was just amazing how many people were freaking out that we didn't have Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram for several hours this week.
But Ingrid, hold on. Let me make this point. If your grandmother told you don't stand on those milk crates that you've stacked up, no matter whether or not Fred and Sally down the street were doing it, if your grandmother told you not to do it, what would you do? You wouldn't do it. But everybody was doing it, not only much to the chagrin of other folks down the street, but also emergency room doctors.
Yeah.
The cinnamon challenge of, what, 6 years ago?
Yeah.
They were seeing emergency room visits there as well. Brandy, you are probably the youngest person in the room in this discussion.
Yes.
What's wrong with your people?
I know. I'm the representative today for all the millennials and Gen Z. I have the answer for this, right? So one of the biggest dangers that social media actually poses is a two-worded monster, and it's way deeper than we actually think, and that's instant gratification. The desire to be fulfilled without delay, right? And so we all, in some way, shape, or form, kind of long for the feeling to be accepted. So when we see a flood of likes come in, or we see a lot of people reposting a tweet or agreeing with a tweet that we tweet out, it gives us a thrill. It feels like, you know, this is my community. This is the place where I belong. And so people long for that. And so oftentimes, especially now, people go to really, really high extents to reach that instant gratification. And that's where you see things like the Cinnamon Challenge coming up, or when we had that outage of Instagram and WhatsApp and Facebook earlier this week. People didn't know what to do because it's like, now I'm unfulfilled. How do I fill this void? How do I, you know, where's my community now? So I think that plays a big role in why you see some of these crazy things that people oftentimes in my generation do.
Nowadays. Yeah, I think you touched on something. Where is my community now? Because yeah. I think there is a divide, Ingrid, between those people who do and do not use social media. And there are people of all ages, I think, although there may be people in those of a certain age, certainly. But I think there are some people of all ages who don't use some of, you know, some of the social media platforms. And I've actually run into, you know, some of them. Yeah, they don't do it. And it depends. You know, my mother is 79. She loves Facebook. My father, stepmother, same generation. They say face what? and so I think that there are people who just, Betty White said a couple of years ago when she went on to Facebook, and she said her reaction was, what an incredible waste of time.
Oh, of course, yes.
So
it's a waste of time, but it's also a way for people to keep connected. I know that my students say that they're only on Facebook because that's how they can reach out to their grandparents. And so there, what is it, 2.89 billion people on Facebook worldwide, 2 billion people on WhatsApp, and 1 billion on Instagram. So there's a lot of people on it. They may not be on it every day. They may not be on it very often. But it's a major factor in the lives of people around the world. And I don't think that we can, you know, there are some people who are not on it and they're not going to be on it. But everybody who's on it finds some value in it, and that's why they're there. There are a lot of people who don't want to deal with that instant gratification that Brandy mentioned, or the that community, because some of that can be toxic. But a lot of people are doing business on it. They're communicating with families on it. They're getting money from family via WhatsApp. So a lot of people find a lot of value in it, and I don't think that we can discount it because of some of the more toxic reasons why people aren't on it. I think we really have to take it into consideration and use it to our best interest and not fall into what Facebook necessarily wants us to do.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the power of social media. How much does it wield on all of us? What are the dangers of allowing social media to control our lives, even a portion of our lives? What do you think? Give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. So one of the things that came up this week was the testimony of Frances Haugen, the former Facebook insider, who was talking about, you know, the many dangers that Facebook had presented. And even before that, and this is for you, Brandy, because I'm sure that you know, were well aware of some of the things that she was saying. But even before this week, we had some of the things that came up during the 2016 election. Some of the things that came up after the 2020 elections, the things that led up, the misinformation, the disinformation, that led up to the January 6th insurrection. This isn't cinnamon swallowing challenge. This isn't this isn't smack a teacher challenge. These are the kinds of things that that disinformation and misinformation led to an attack on our democracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this actually goes way, way deeper. My background is in digital marketing and social media, but a lot of marketing in itself relies heavily on psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And so this goes way, way deeper down to like the Maslow hierarchy of needs. So the things that us as humans need in order to live in a healthy manner. And one of those levels in that hierarchy is the need to belong, the self-belonging. And so a common thing in all of these events that you just named, they required building a community in which that's where social media thrives. You know, when social media releases new features and new releases and new updates, they're releasing them based off of what they think society needs at this time. And around all of those times, we needed people to band together, and not band together like together, band together as in you're either on side A or B. And so these platforms kind of capitalize off of that, and also brands and organizations kind of capitalize off of that, which made it even easier to assemble these type of communities. Because, you know, when it comes to communities and building it, the way that you build one really, really quickly is by maximizing an emotion, whether it's anger or sadness. It's like, hey, do you feel sad? Do this thing with me. Or is this thing making you angry? Let's put a stop to it. So I think that social media in that time actually just did its job and moved with society. And unfortunately, a lot of things unfortunately happened because of that, but it honestly was social media just doing its job, building community.
Let me go to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Yes, we're using good old fashioned phones tonight. Give us a call. Let's go to Kanetta. Calling from DC. Kanetta, turn down your radio. And what's on your mind?
Yes. Hi. I'm calling because I wanted to say that while initially I was against Facebook, I just felt like, you know, it was just a platform for people to go on there and be negative and be toxic. However, I was a convert, and I found that it was a very useful tool and app, especially for families who don't be able to have an opportunity to see each other every day, and also to help bring families together. Facebook really served, really helped during COVID when a lot of people were shut in, didn't have an opportunity, of course, to go out and have that physical contact with family. Facebook was it for us. We had an opportunity to stay in contact. Matter of fact, a lot of those naysayers became converts and started using Facebook because they realized without Facebook, they really were missing out on a lot. Now, don't get me wrong. Facebook has served as a platform for those toxic people, but I don't blame Facebook. I blame the fact that people are toxic with or without Facebook. So I think, you know, we have to look at it as to what the tool is meant for and how we're using it.
Mm.
So I have to say, you know, again, I was against it. And I also was able to better explain to my mother how Facebook is to be used. She's of that generation where, you know, I can pick up the phone and call me. Don't text me. Don't email me. Call me. But when I explained to her how Facebook is used and that so many family members were on there and that they were using it to celebrate birthdays, the birth of babies, graduations, and these things she was missing out on because she would come into a conversation and we're talking about these things and she's looking like, how do you all know about that? And we're like, Facebook. Oh, mm-hmm. Facebook again. But then she realized, you know, these things she was missing out on because people are not traditionally just picking up the phone, calling each other to share that information.
Anymore. Okay.
So she's converted, and I think she's pretty pleased about it now. She has a better understanding because before she was receiving all these comments, and her face was like, I don't know them people. Why are they sending me these comments?
Okay.
Tell them to stop sending this. Come cut this thing off.
Well, Kanetta, I thank you so much, and I think you made an excellent point as it relates to Facebook and other social media platforms as being a tool. And thank you so much, for that. And Ingrid, you know, your thoughts briefly before I go to a break, because I have some some thoughts about what she was just sharing as well. Which
I think she's absolutely correct. And if we are looking at the worldwide impact of Facebook and WhatsApp, we haven't even talked about that. A lot of people are on WhatsApp because they talk to their families in other countries, other parts of the world. They conduct business via Instagram. So people have photography businesses, and they show their photos, and they get clients via Instagram. Facebook, again, is a really huge family connector. So all of these things, even though there's some craziness on it, if you can figure out how to make it work for you, it can be the most useful tool for any social commerce or entertainment type activities.
Yeah, absolutely. I need to take a break. When we come back, more about the power of social media. Is it good or is it bad? D, calling from Arlington, Virginia, we're going to talk to you. Also, Melvin, calling from Baltimore, we are going to talk to you as well. So please do not hang up. Lines are still open. If you can't get through, please keep calling at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll take your calls all the way up until 8 o'clock. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, the app. Download it to your smartphone, and you can hear the program in its entirety. And, of course, 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back on Sirius XM in just a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, the app, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We are having a conversation about the power of social media. A lot of it coming to a head this week on Capitol Hill, and of course with this huge worldwide outage for Instagram, Facebook, and WhatsApp. A lot of questions being raised about the power that it wields over all of us. My guests are Ingrid Sturgis, digital media expert and chair of the Department of Media, Journalism, and Film at the Howard University School of Communications, and social media strategist Brandy Chu. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Melvin, calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling, Melvin. What's on your mind?
Good evening, Mr. Fisher. How are you this evening?
I'm good. What's on your mind?
Listen, well, I'm a person that can't stand Facebook personally.
Okay.
I do think that Facebook can be a powerful tool to work with, but Facebook, about where they at, what they're doing. And to me, that's just trouble because people have been robbed from their homes. You know, because people tell them we're in South Carolina, we doing this, we doing that. And I find it was used in ways.
Melvin, unfortunately, you are breaking up. If you can give me a call back, because we don't have a good signal for you, but please give us a call back because I do want to hear what you have to say. So give me a call back if you can. Let's go to D. D calling from Arlington, Virginia. Give us what's on your mind, Dee.
All right. So, Harold, we know each other because we were Facebook Messenger friends back when I was getting those 30-day bans.
Oh, you were in Facebook jail?
Remember I was in Facebook jail?
Yes, I remember, yeah.
Because I was defending black people, and apparently that's considered hate speech. So, and you remember what I had said. It was not anything crazy, but after that, I said to myself, you know what, because I'm tired of Facebook. They do have a lot of power. And if I want to talk with somebody, I can just text or I can call them. So I just really hardly ever go back to Facebook. And then I continue to get messages from them like, come back to Facebook. No, I don't think so. Facebook was really set up by a bunch of geeks over in dudes in dorm rooms.
Aren't you got to be a geek to do any of this stuff.
But yeah, they were doing it to rank women and how they look. And that's how it was set up. Not like mm-hmm. this lady on Congress said, like, it was not set up to like for hate or anything. Yes, it was. It was set up to sexually harass women on campus. And it's turned into a multi-billion-dollar venture for some geek that's now got billions of dollars. So I say,
I think that it would be smart to use it as a tool, like for when we have pandemics and things like that. But as far as like trying to like use it to keep in touch with people, I think it can be dangerous, because if you get shut out and then you have no way of getting in touch with people, then you have the people who are freaking out because like Facebook down for 16 hours. I had no idea Facebook was down until I heard about it a couple of days ago. What? Facebook is down? Do not let Facebook and social media and all that stuff take control of your life, because it really is a time waster, and I'm so much more free with my time now that I'm not on it.
Okay. But Dee, stay out of jail. Don't collect
$200. I'm not on Facebook hardly, so.
Thank you so much. So here's the thing, Ingrid and Brandy. Because it's not just Facebook. It is all of the social media platforms. And to our caller's point, I think the thing that is dangerous is that people don't use them with a critical eye. Let's take the Ingrids and the Brandys and the Heralds of the world. The first thing that we are information professionals, okay? Mm-hmm. Whether you're journalists or what have you. And just because not everything that you see obviously is factual. Mm-hmm. You know, we have alternative truths and truthisms and clickbait and all of the other things. And I remember I had this debate with a friend of mine just a couple of weeks ago when she was talking about 6,000 people have died from COVID-19 vaccines. And I said, where on earth did you get that information? And she said she got it off of the internet. But see, for me, the first thing that I ask is check your sources. Of course, she didn't know where the source of that information was. And sometimes on the internet, you have to really drill down and figure out where this information is coming from.
Of course. But also, that's the fun out of it, right? So you look at, you know, some people and they see these like, you know, outrageous misinformation, misleading posts that are so exciting, so like, you know, frivolous, so scandalous. It like researching it more takes the thrill away. And I think that
I didn't think about that.
This is where these people are chasing these things that they can't get in real life, which is thrill, which is fulfillment and things like that. And so I think that's it. And it's a dangerous, dangerous thing, especially during, you know, politically heavy seasons or, you know, societal heavy seasons, because people just frankly, it'll take the thrill out of it to research it more, and people will just run with it. And the only thing they have to do is repost it, and then boom, you're on how many people's feeds, you know? So I think that's probably a reason why.
Yeah, well, you know, we also have a feedback loop on Facebook. And so Facebook gives us more of the things that we already get. So if we have friends who say those outrageous things, and they're our friends, we're going to get more people who say those outrageous things. And we also know that Black people were specifically targeted during the 2016 campaign to feed them all kinds of disinformation, to make them more divided, to suppress the vote, to get them to vote for the wrong or the candidate that was not doing in their best favor. So we know that Black people are targeted by people who post on Facebook, and they get into your feed, and your friends say this is disinformation and misinformation. And so we keep getting it, and we don't know where it's coming from because it's an algorithm that's feeding us the information. And some of the people who are feeding us this information aren't even real people. They're robots. They're bots. And so we do have to be careful, because there is a strand of bad actors who mean for us to be fed this disinformation. So we do have to learn how to discern what is fact and what is fiction online. But unfortunately, not everybody understands how the internet works or Facebook works. And so they're getting
tricked and trolled by things that they're not sure where it comes from, but they believe it because it shows up, and maybe their best friend sent it to them, and so they're going to believe it because their best friend is somebody that they trust.
And
so
it,
we do have a problem with that, a huge problem.
And it does feed into the tribalism. It feeds into the "I told you so,"
mm-hmm.
and often, as it relates to news media, you hear the term tribalism often referred to conservatives by progressives, but tribalism is not something that is specifically used to point at conservatives. It's anyone. Progressives yeah. can be tribal. Liberals can be tribal. Racists can be tribal. And if you feed into what you believe, if you see someone that agrees with you, then it goes back to, well, see, I told you so. Even if you don't find that this source of information or misinformation or disinformation is factual. Because if it feeds into what you believe, then you're just going to go with it.
Yeah. And I think Brandy had a good point, because a lot of what we are fed are things that lights up our emotions, either makes us really, really, really angry so that we're going to share it with more people because we're outraged, or make us feel really, really, really happy. And so it feeds into what we believe and what we like and what we know. And so, yeah, we are going through this internet, which moves us by emotions. And so we get triggered by some of these things because it either makes us very, very angry or it makes us very, very happy. And it feeds into that tribalism depending on where the information is coming from.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jason calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Jason. What's on your mind?
Yeah, good evening, everyone. I have a question I like to ask about the Facebook. Based on the information that was gathered from this person that was, employed through Facebook, and I think she had a court hearing about the 10,000 pages of documentation that was that she had gotten from Facebook itself. My concern is this. Based on the disinformation or misinformation that Facebook does have, why isn't there any federal regulation that would guard against any targeted group or groups? It seems like other sources would have some type of regulation that you would go by, or a standard by which you would base your information on. But Facebook, it's all over the place, here, there, everywhere. It doesn't seem to have any regulation or anything. And my concern is, why isn't there any regulation?
That is such a wonderful question. Ingrid and then Brandy.
Well, there is some regulation, and they're trying to change the regulation, because the regulation basically says the stuff that's on the internet, you can't sue Facebook because somebody else posts something on Facebook. So you can't sue Facebook for something that I post on it or Brandy posts on it. So Facebook is kind of immune. And one of the things that the whistleblower said was that we need to change that law. And I forget when that law was enacted, but it's relatively new, because it was set up to protect all of these social media giants, or at the time they weren't giants, but they were protected, the social media, because they said that these companies are new and they're doing this great thing, and we need to give them free reign so that they can grow and hire more people and employ more people. But now we're at the point where they're protected by this law, but they're not protecting us, because they allow all of these things to be on Facebook. And so basically you can say anything you want on Facebook. Mm-hmm. The thing that the whistleblower said, the woman, Ms. Haig,
right,
is that she thinks that we ought to change the law because they should be responsible for the things that they carry on the site.
I agree. 100%. They should change that law.
Brandy?
I am going to play the devil's advocate and say that I actually think that, and I feel I forget who mentioned it earlier during this conversation, but they said that social media is literally a tool. And so it's not, my perspective, I don't think that it's necessarily their fault as to what lands there. I do think that there should be policing of some sort of misinformation. So I love that they have like the feedback options on Instagram and Facebook when it comes to like these big issues like COVID-19 and some of these political and racial issues where you can flag things as misinformation. However, I think that it's kind of unrealistic for us to place that expectation on these big platforms to say, you know, you can't say that or you can say that. I do think that afterwards there should be some type of policing so that people can provide feedback. But I think that it's nearly impossible for them to kind of prevent people from saying what they want to say online. Because, you know, Facebook was made in 2004, and from 2004 to 2021, things have changed. And people's perspective has changed, and the way they use social media has changed. And so I feel like the tool itself isn't bad, so I don't think we should necessarily come so hard down on them. But I do think that there should be, like, policing should be reimagined, if I could say that.
I agree with...
Well, but, you know, the thing of it, I don't mean to cut you off, Mr. Fisher.
No, go ahead.
I just want to say this. You know, somebody should be held accountable, especially when harm is being perpetrated on certain groups of people. I'm looking at this incident where they were had some type of information about these young girls and how they should commit suicide. And then the suicide rate as a result from that, you know, increased. Now, I'm not saying that it was a direct link, but it was, you know, there was an increase in the suicide rate among young girls between the ages of 12 and 15. And that was due in part to from what the information that the Facebook had put out. So my thing is that somebody should be held accountable for that. And just because, you know, we have a mechanism in place where people, you know, there's certain things that you can get from the Facebook, but there are other things that that are not good, that are not positive, and that's where the regulation, I think, should be put in place.
I agree with Brandy about regulation. That I do believe in some cases that something should be put in place, and we do know that recently. And I think it was Facebook, but I also think it may have also been Twitter that was removing false information about vaccines. Mm-hmm. I think it was Twitter. Forgive me if I don't have that information. And I think that's really, really that's good. Mm-hmm. And I think that and I do know that even before this week, there had been, like with YouTube, the removal of right-wing hate speech and trying to scrub YouTube videos, which is really difficult because as quickly as they put those things up or as quickly as they take those things down, they find another way to put it. But let me raise this, Jason.
Mm-hmm.
Does that now mean that we go to libraries and burn copies of Mein Kampf? Does that mean that we go to the library and get rid of copies of Gone with the Wind? You know, I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah. I think it's a false equivalency.
You think?
I don't think they're equal.
Why? Because young people don't go to the libraries anymore because they all go to the internet?
No, I go to the library.
I know.
Use the library. But the thing is that as the whistleblower Hagen said, that the problem with Facebook and all of its other children is that
they intentionally put up information that harms people, children, girls, and society. And she's, you know, in the Wall Street Journal, they have documentation where they have people even talking about how they're going to use this tool in a way that hurts a democratic society. And that was her point, was that it's not so much that this stuff is drifting up and we're sharing and we're doing this. There's some intent on Facebook's part to make more money at the harm of society, of children and girls. And I think that's what we have to look out for.
Right.
The difference between that and reading Mein Kampf is that you can get up and go to the library and get the book and take it out and bring it back home.
Right.
But if you're on Facebook all day long, you're intentionally being fed this stuff day in and day out and all
right.
day long.
Okay, so So this is where I disagree with the false equivalency.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying that lazy people, you know, just because information comes to you instead of you going to it, makes it less harmful, or more.
I'm just saying that there's a distance. Once you read a book, you're not being, you don't have the same sensory attack or sensory interaction that you have online as you have in a book.
Yeah, I think I'm being a devil's advocate here, but I'm saying before there was the internet, hate speech was in the library.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And that is where the Ku Klux Klan recruited, and the neo Nazis, that is where they, you know, got their information to share, you know, en masse. And so but now what was, you know, that bad stuff that was in the library along with the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was, you know,
well,
hold on. Let me interrupt you. this is not Jason's show. But whether it's Christianity, Buddhism, Nazism, you know, whether it's how to commit suicide or how to build a house. It's in the library and it's on the internet. It's on social media. And so to that point, I say that there does need to be some kind of regulation. Mm-hmm. And to Ms. Haugen's point, Frances Haugen's point, and to the point that Ingrid was making, that yes, whether it is an attack on democracy or the health and welfare of teen girls and boys,
mm-hmm.
If these businesses don't stand up and do what is right, big tobacco,
mm-hmm.
that the Congress, you know, our lawmakers need to do that, but they are slow and steady, and we know they don't always win that race.
Right.
And nor do they even understand what it is that they're supposed to be doing. That's the other problem.
There you go.
Right.
Know what the problem is and how to fix it.
Yeah. Jason, thank you so much for bringing some thoughtful suggestions and input to the conversation. I appreciate you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's go to Keith. Keith calling from Baltimore. Keith, what's on your mind? Keith, yeah, go ahead.
How you doing? I think in a lot of ways, too, this social media thing, I think it's dangerous. It's a dangerous form of this modern technology. And especially in terms of violating people's constitutional rights to free speech. You know, and I'm hoping that Donald Trump, you know, he's filing a lawsuit.
To get back on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, and I hope he wins. I hope he wins because I think it will set a precedent for the nation. Now, you know, I don't care how you feel about Donald Trump, but I think that I'm hoping that he wins this argument because when you start just, you know, when you create this technology and say, and choose between who can get on and who can't get on, who can speak. Because the bottom line, you know, we could argue this in different ways. You know, the people that were involved in the riot on January 6th, they did what they wanted to do. You know, I don't think Donald Trump had all that much influence over them. The other thing is, you know, they also cut Louis Farrakhan off.
That's true.
I got issues. I have serious concern about that. To me, that part is dangerous. Now, the other part about this Facebook thing is, you know, the FBI, I'm sure the FBI and the police, I know they love it. Because they don't really have to go through a lot when they want to catch their criminals. You know what I'm saying? Because any and everybody is getting on Facebook. They can see who you connect with. They see your whole social network. They just come knock on your door. They come and pick you up. They trace you down through your friends because you all over Facebook. Stuff that you put on there, you know, once it's on there, it's on there. And I don't want you if I connect with you, why you got to be sending all these other people that I ain't never seen, that I don't know them, want to be joining up with me? You know, it's a nuisance. And the most dangerous thing is, from a humanitarian aspect, I think, is that it's controlling people's behavior, and especially this younger generation. You know, they're not communicating anymore.
You know,
you don't pick up the phone, you don't call your parents, you're sending out Facebook pictures.
You know, that's a really, you said quite a bit there, Keith, and I think you make some really salient points. And I must say that last point that you made, Ingrid, Professor, you know, teach the children to communicate, to interact. You know, I have a 23-year-old, and you know, I'd like to think that I communicate very well, and I think she's doing okay, but there are times when, you know, I do want to say, when she's sitting in the car with me, baby, put your phone down, you know, and I think Keith does make an important point. Keith, thank you so much for sharing with us. What do you think, Ingrid? He said a mouthful.
You know, as far as Facebook and all of the social media controlling who gets on their platform, you know, they're really a business. And so they do get to decide. They're not a newspaper. They're not the government, rather. So the government is the one that you're always worried about them having control. But a company, you know, according to, you know, the Constitution, a company can put people on or take people off. And so if they don't want Donald Trump on because they feel that he's a dangerous source of information and communications, you know, that's their right to do it, and that's their decision to make. And I think that some of the things that happened when he was in office kind of shows what his intent was, and it wasn't necessarily a positive intent for black people or for many segments of society. So I think as a company, they do get to decide who uses their product or not. I think they can.
Yeah.
And whether or not we agree with it, that's a whole nother story. You know, we could make a case for we don't agree with it. Everybody should be allowed to be on. But, you know, they're a company, so they can decide according to the way the laws go now.
Yeah. Brandy?
Yes. So, yes. I want to comment on the last part of what the caller just said, because I obviously am the representative of millennials.
For every young person on the planet.
For every young person in the world, I'm the representative. So basically, I heard you guys said that, like, you guys have, like, 20, you know, something-year-old children, and, you know, because of social media, they kind of lack the communication skills. Or, you know, like what you guys deem as communication skills. So I feel like I have a different perspective on that. I don't think that people, younger people around my age, lack communication skills. I just think that communication changed. So now communication changed. And so, and it's kind of, it was kind of abrupt. So it's really, really hard to kind of think that way, especially when, you know, you guys have been doing things the same way for so long. You know, you guys will pick up the phone and call somebody, or y'all will go to each other's house or whatever. And now we, you know, we talk on social media. We use that as a communication tool. At first, the phone was like, the phone call was the main, you know, source of, you know, this is my communication tool. Now, you know, DMs, like, and so I feel like, and I may get backlash for this.
Oh, I've got something for you, and I've got a minute left, but go ahead.
Yes. I feel like our older generation should be a little teeny bit more receptive to the way that we communicate now. So
who are you calling old?
No,
I'm kidding.
Seasoned. and I think that they should just be more receptive just a little bit and maybe try it. So, you know, instead of like, you know, calling to say good morning, maybe you send a DM and like they'll look at the phone and be like, did my father just send me a DM and say good morning? But it's like, you know, I'm trying to adapt to your way of communication because I love you and I want to communicate with you. I know it just looks different now.
Yeah, except, you know, when COVID is over and you're in the office and you walk by and you're in your phone and I say good morning and you go, ugh. But that's, then there's that. Ingrid Sturgis, Brandy Chu, thank you both. Yeah. For talking to us, yeah, I appreciate it. And, you know, Brandy, I instead of saying goodbye, I should have sent you a text. But
yeah, please, send me a DM.
There you go. That's the Daily Drum for this Thursday, October 7th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.